Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 238, and we're going to continue now from where we stopped last time in Exodus 23 and verse 18. And prior to that, we mentioned the three pilgrimages. That is the three times in a year that God commanded all of his people to make a pilgrimage to the place where he was going to put his name there. And mind you, the command is very simple here. God said very plainly, as we should read it again, though we covered that before that, let's read it again because there is another point I'd like to add here. Verse 17, three times, he didn't say two, didn't say one, didn't say seven, he said three. And unfortunately, you know, human nature, the way it is, when God says seven, we say one is enough. When he says three, we say one is enough. You see? And God seeks those people who would worship him in truth. You see, if you do it only twice, it's not in truth. And if you do it only one time that you eat the unleavened bread, that's not in truth. That's partial truth. It's a good beginning. But if you want to go to perfection, you do it seven times. If you want to obey the will of God, you know, body, mind, and soul, with everything that is in you, then you don't tell God how much you are going to do it. You see, and what are the circumstances, we don't have that prerogative. God determines what is righteousness, and righteousness is when he said seven, it means seven, and when he said three, it means three. And we all know what we have done with this command. You see, when God says three times in a year, all your males shall appear before me, that is before the Lord God, and the word that he used here for Lord is Ha'adon, and that's the real meaning of the word Lord. You see, Lord is a translation of Adon. And generally, it's not Adon, generally it's Yehovah. But here he said, Ha'adon Yehovah. In other words, the Lord, the Eternal. And so the command is very simple. And yet you see what happened in the past several years in the modern churches of God. At least one that became a major one in the past many years determined, not based on the law of God, but based on human input and human understanding and human interpretation of the law of God, that we're going to do it basically as time developed, though they began right, but as time developed, the doctrine became that only once. And there are those who advertise on the radio that God has a vacation plan, you know, for mankind, and it's on the Feast of Tabernacles. Well, the reality is, to begin with, it's not a vacation time. But the truth is that God commanded us three times. So this is what the second tithe is all about, for the three pilgrimages. And so you see what we have done with that. Well, you know, we can say many things about it, but that's not my point. My point is just to make it very plain that the law of God, that had we studied it, all of us, with fear and reverence toward God, we would have obeyed it, as God told us, regardless of whatever circumstances, you know, we invent in our own minds and hearts. You see? And we don't see us do it. Well, that's what God tells us. Grow in grace and knowledge and understanding. And the more we grow in his fear, the more we want to obey him. And we obey his law and not our own dictates, our own understanding, and, you know, the traditions that we have, whatever we've done here and there. God is not interested in any one of that. And that's what the problem was always with the children of Israel. Always made up their mind instead of following the mind of God. And so I just wanted to add this point here. And the reality here, what are we talking about when we are studying this law? Is this an Old Testament? And some would say, well, you know, okay, in the Old Testament they did three pilgrimages. Today we don't have to, you know. We are a New Testament church. We're under Jesus Christ, not under, you know, the Old Testament. And then for many people still, even among the people of God, and there are many, who still think that, you know, the Old Testament was given by the God of the Old Testament, and then the New Testament was given by the God of the New Testament. And since we're under the new one, well, you know, we don't have to necessarily obey the God of the Old Testament. Well, that shows, you know, extreme ignorance, and probably even willful on the part of many, because, as the Apostle Paul made it very plain, and some claim that the Apostle Paul invented, you know, a new religion called Christianity. You know, they call it the Pauline doctrines, whatever it may be. And The Apostle Paul made it very plain to the Corinthians and to all the churches. And to begin with, he didn't even need to say that because all of them should have known it. And so he told them, I don't want you to be ignorant. In other words, you know these things, but you're acting like you're ignorant people. And you're not thinking straight. And to begin with, in those days, unlike today, people didn't have a Bible in their home, or several of them, as many of us do. And so, there could be a possibility that some of them did not really know everything. And so Paul was explaining to them a very simple, plain fact that apparently many of us have forgotten, even though we know it academically, but because of our background, Protestant background, Catholic, whatever it may be, many of us are still so deeply into it without even realizing it. I mean, look at our terminology that we use all the time. There is no difference between us and the churches that we came out of. You know, that's a testimony to that. But the Apostle Paul, who was a law-abiding Jew, that's what he was. But he's not a Protestant or a Catholic. This is what he was, a law-abiding Jew. And he was raised on the law of God. And he knew who gave that law. You see? So once upon a time, he didn't know. But when God called him and opened his eyes, when he confronted him in person, then he knew who that God was, who that Lord was. And that's in essence what happens to most of us who are Jews, who come out of this background. When our eyes are opened, we realize that the God that we worshipped all of our lives, that we've been told, you know, is the God of the Old Testament, while the other one is the God of the New Testament, is the same God, now speaking to us, dealing with us, working with us, in us, through us, and so forth. It's the same God. And that's what Paul told the brethren. I don't want you to be ignorant, you know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 to 4. That our fathers, you know, you think that you are the first Christians, you know, you got it all wrong. Our fathers are the ones that were baptized into Moses, you know, and they're through the Red Sea and by the cloud. They're the ones who drank that spiritual drink and ate that spiritual food. And they are the ones that followed that spiritual rock, and that rock was Christ. So what are we studying here? Christian doctrine, Christian principles, Christian testimonies and teachings and so forth. And then what is it that is on our mind when we think about this terminology? Oh, we think this is New Testament stuff only. That shows us how ignorant we are. And that shows us how much we are still very deeply a part of Babylon. And God commands us to come out of it. So Jesus Christ commanded His church from Sinai to Jerusalem to this very day that if you are to obey My law and worship God in truth and in spirit three times, you know, if you already make a pilgrimage, you see, three times you appear before the Lord your God. And we don't do it. And so, you know, we ended up with this tradition and a habit, but it's not of God, of only once a year. And so we've got, you know, all kind of reasons today why we cannot do it. Well, the reality is, God is not commanding us today, unlike in the old days, no more than He commanded Israel in the wilderness, is to make a pilgrimage. So circumstances were different. And so they just stayed where they were. But it was, when it was in the land, now that they were spread all over the country, God had a headquarters, Shiloh. After that, He had Jerusalem. And there He commanded all of His people Israel to come and appear before Him. But as they travel abroad, either through captivity or whatever it may be, they were not required to appear before God three times because of circumstances. Those who could made it. Those who were in the land did it. But those who were in faraway countries, you see, there was an administrative decision at that time. If they can, fine, they can make it. But if they can't, which are, you know, the majority of them were there anyway, what they had to do is what they do to this very day. They appear before God every Sabbath, and they appear before God every holiday in their dwelling places. So what that means is that we can still keep this command of appearing before God three times, you see, wherever we are. And so to think that we have to choose a place, which God hasn't called upon us to do, now we may do it, you know, for our own convenience, and it's nice, you know, to get out of town and things like that and have the brethren, But to invent a doctrine as if God told us to go and do it there and choose places in our own Shilohs and in our own Jerusalems when God never commanded us to do that. You see, that's not a command from God, that's a tradition of men. And it's not that it is contrary to God. If we want to do it, you know, for whatever reason, that's fine. But let's not say that this is a command from God and He places His name in all those special places like He did in Shiloh and Jerusalem, which He never does. He never did. Throughout the captivity of Judah all this time, even when they were in 70 years in the captivity, He hasn't done that. He hasn't commanded them, you know, to search out for fish sites and to, you know, He's going to put His name there. You see, that was a different dispensation, so to speak. And so they had to have a different administration, and they met wherever they were, in their dwelling places. And God didn't command them, just like they were in the wilderness, to come before Him into a specific place where He would place His name, because there were only two places that God placed His name in the history of Israel. You see? And that was Shiloh and Jerusalem. That is, as a people. On an individual basis, that was a different story. You know, with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, there was Bethel, and there was, Beersheba, and places here and there. And so that was a different story. So let's understand, you know, this command, a very plain command of God, that we read it all the time, and it goes over our head, and we're not even paying attention to what we are reading. And even though we read three times, we appear before me, we say, oh no, it's only one time, and that's on the Feast of Tabernacles. Well, that shows confusion in our minds and hearts. So let's understand it. You know, we still appear before God three times to this very day, wherever we are. So ironically, on one hand, we are obeying the command, but in ignorance. And on the other hand, we invent our own doctrine that it is once a year that we just stay and leave everything behind and come out and go to a certain place, and we think by that we know we're obeying this command. Why not obeying this command? Whether we stayed in town or went over there, it wouldn't make any difference. We're still obeying this command in that sense, because we are now in the wilderness. And that's how God described His people now in the past, you know, since the days of the dispersion, as they were ejected out of the land in the days of Rome. The church in the wilderness. And the church in the wilderness, like in Sinai, in the wilderness there, was not commanded to just leave everything behind and go to a certain place. You see? And there, supposedly, God put His name there, and this is where we appear before God. Now, if we want to do it for personal reasons, because of the society in which we are, that's one thing. But let's not call it the doctrine of God. You see, that's a human invention. If it's the doctrine of God, let's go to Jerusalem. That's the only place where He placed His name, and there is no other place on the face of the earth where He did. On the other hand, where His people are, as Jesus Christ Himself said in the book of John, chapter 4, He told the Samaritan woman, you know, the hour will come. Well, they will neither worship God in, you know, the mountain where you did, the Samaritans, you see, in Gerizim, in the West Bank, or in Jerusalem. But the true worshippers, you know, would worship God in truth and in spirit. In other words, wherever they are. But if you want to talk about the special place that God placed His name there, let's not call any fish sites as a holy place. You know, that's in essence what we are saying. We're inventing our own doctrine. God will be with us wherever we are, obviously. That's beside the point. But we don't need to distort the scriptures. And so when he talks here about the three pilgrimages, he's talking about going either to Shiloh or to Jerusalem. If you go there, fine, you're obeying this command. But if not, just let us understand. We are in the wilderness, and wherever we are, you know, used to teach people wrongly that unless you leave your job and you leave your home and you come out and you go to a fish site, you are disobeying God, and that was a lie. A lot of people got hurt and lost their jobs, and that was because of foolishness on the part of the ministers who taught that. Lack of knowledge of the scripture. In other words, inventing their own doctrines. God didn't tell them that. They invented it and brought a lot of hardship on the brethren. There was no need for that. You see, just like the Jews to this very day. They keep, you know, the feast wherever they are. And so did the church in the wilderness for the past many centuries. Wherever they were, that's where they kept the feast. They did not invent these doctrines that we do. Anyway, I just thought that this scripture needs to be revisited and illuminated a little bit more, amplified more. And so, let's remember, we're talking about the mind of Jesus Christ. That's what we are studying. That's His nature, mind, character. And He said very plainly, I change not. Some of us have forgot that, and we think he's made some changes, and now we've got a new religion, and we are New Testament church. A lot of ignorance, you know, that shows us that we are still, to a large degree, the children of the churches out of which we came, because we're using their terminology and their theology to a large degree without even realizing it. And so let's continue here in verse 18. We read this one before. Let's just go through it for the sake of continuity. Ye shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with the leavened bread, neither shall the fat of my feast remain all night until the morning. As you see, you know, the blood that you leave outside, if it sticks around, you know, it gets germs and bacteria and all that, it begins to stink. And God said, I don't want that, you know, just pour it in the ground. And so this is what he says, neither shall the fat of my feast, that is of my sacrifice, remain until the morning. In other words, the feast, speaking about when they come in circle before him, and in specific, it's speaking about the three feasts, not just one of them. He's not talking about tabernacles, he's talking about any one of them. Be it Pentecost, be it Passover, be it the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Sukkot, Feast of Booths. So he said, don't let the fat of my feast, it's my feast, it's not yours, you know, we made it ours in many ways, and so everybody does, you know, whatever is right in his own sight, that makes it ours. You see, when we follow his command, that is his. So he said, don't let it remain all night until the morning. Verse 19, the choicest first fruits of your land ye shall bring into the house of the Lord your God. Now, where is the house of the Lord your God? Is it anywhere, you know, we decided to have a feast site? Is that the house of the Lord? Obviously not. There's only one place where God placed his name, where God came there, and where his spirit dwelled there. You see, when he dwelled there between the cherubim, you see, we should not invent our own doctrines and think that this is pleasing to the sight of God. Let's understand, you know, what we can do and what we cannot do under the circumstances, so that we're in the wilderness, and, you know, we do not need to play this kind of games, that we're going to the place, you know, where God put his name there. He hasn't. He's with us anyway, wherever we are. And that's the way it is. Whether we stay home, whether we build a booth, you know, at home, whether we go to a special place, God is going to be with us. That doesn't make it a holy site. That place is only one, and that's in Jerusalem, and will always be there. And God hasn't moved it, you know, to any other country, and you know, all over the country, you know, all over the world, you know. Everyone has his own temple nowadays. And so he said, you shall not seethe a kid in his mother's milk, and we covered that before that. In verse 20, now he tells them, behold, I will send an angel before you. Later on, we find out who is this angel. Up to this point, maybe Moses knew, and other prophets may have known, but it's only later on in Daniel that we find out this angel that he's talking about, the angel, the prince, who is in charge of Israel, was actually Michael. And we read about it in Daniel chapter 12 and verse 1. That's the angel he's talking about. Behold, I send an angel before you to keep you by the way, and to bring you into the place which I have prepared. God is the one that prepared that place, and he prepared also Jerusalem and before that Shiloh to be his place also. If God hasn't done it, you know, it's not us, you know, who go around, you know, looking for a nice place. We've got all the accommodations for vacation, and that's in essence what we're looking for, you see. And then we say, well, we've got all the conditions that we like here. That means God placed his name here. You see, that's our own doctrine. It's not the biblical doctrine. It's not from God. You know, he's the one that is searching it out. He's the one that placed his name over there, and he's the one that brings us over there. You see, we don't bring him over there. And so he said, I'll bring you into the place which I have prepared, regardless of what you have done. You know, we have nothing to do with that. Verse 21, he says, take heed of him, that is of the angel, of Michael, and hearken unto his voice. And so, well, at this point, you don't really hear much about angels communing, you know, with Moses. And yet, later on, God revealed, well, as you read through the Apostle Paul, that many of the things that God delivered to Moses, he had done it by the disposition of angels. You see, not only Michael, but all others also he sent to deliver messages. And Gabriel also would be involved, because he was sent oftentimes to deliver messages to Israel. But the one in charge of Israel is Michael, and God used many angels to deal with his people. At this point, he hasn't chosen to record that. And he says, take heed of him, and hearken unto His voice. You see, you take heed of Him and you listen to His voice, but you do not worship Him. You see, as ignorant people, superstitious, begin to worship angels. And there are people who do it to this very day. You know, they carry those angels around their necks, you know, they think that'll give them good luck and protection and safety. Well, the angels are there to protect us, but we do not worship them. Verse 21, he said, take heed of Him and hearken unto His voice. Be not rebellious against Him, for He will not pardon your transgression. You see? Because the angel is not the one that forgives. God forgives. The angel is there to be in charge of us. And if we don't behave ourselves, He smacks us. You see? And let's not play games and tempt God or tempt His angels. And so that, you know, He makes it very plain. Don't get Him angry. For He will not pardon your transgression. For My name is in Him. You see? He's My messenger, My servant. Later on, you know, you read in Malachi about the messengers, that is the angels of God. And there were several of them. The priest is the messenger of God, the angel of God. You see, and his name, the name of God is in him because He consecrated him, you know, to be the teacher of Israel. And then he talks about the very prophet, you know, through whom he delivered the message. His name is Malachi, Malachi, which means My angel. So you got two there. And then you've got John the Baptist that was sent, and later on somebody comes in the spirit of Elijah, and both of them came in the spirit of Elijah. So you've got the third one there, you see, up to now three men. And then you've got the ultimate angel, the angel of the Lord, the angel of the covenant, and that's the God of Israel Himself. And so, but in this case, you know, God is with them, He's in their midst, but they're constantly rebellious, they don't want Him. And so He's going to send angels, and I'm there, and those angels, as they came, we know the history of Israel, and they spoke to people person to person. And as Paul would say, you know, be forgetful to entertain strangers, because some people have entertained angels. And angels appear and come and sit with the people of God, and eat with them, and deliver them, and do all kind of things. And we see them, and we talk to them, and oftentimes we don't even know who they are. You see, because God has not chosen to be in that kind of a relationship with us at this point. And so He sends His angels to deal on a daily basis with His people. And so it says in verse 22, but if you will not indeed hearken unto His voice and do all that I speak, you see, I will be speaking, He is going to deliver the message now and then. He said, if you don't do it, then I will be an enemy unto your enemies. You see? And we do not want God to be in that position against us. And an adversary unto your adversaries. For My angel shall go before you and bring you in into the Amorite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Canaanite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. And I, not you, even though you're going to be doing the fighting, you see, I will cut them off. A lot of us in our midst have forgotten that, because a lot of people, you know, when they look at Israel to begin with, that many who have so much poison in their heart and minds, who are not capable of even calling the land Israel, even though that's the name of the land, and the Jews recognize that. If we live in the Galilee, we cannot call it Judea, or Judah, you see, that's the land of Israel. And all the other parts, you know, where Judah didn't live, they had to call the whole land Israel, because that's the name of the land. And here it is, more than 52 years ago, that land was established as the land of Israel, you know, taking on the ancient name of it, the correct name, the only name that God gives it, generally speaking. A lot of us in our midst, you know, have so much anti-Semitic undertones without even realizing it, and we insist on calling it Palestine. Now, why do we do it? Well, let's answer that before God, not before men. And so we look at Israel, and there are a lot of people, you know, among the children of Israel. Of course, a lot of them don't even know that they are Israelites. They think about the Jews, you know, they kill all those Palestinians, you know, they're not behaving themselves. But God makes it very plain, as in the days of old, so it is today. I will be the one who is going to cut them off. See, they don't belong there. They're defying God. They're squatting in His land, and they claim that land is theirs, and they claim it to be an Arab land. You see, when God swore by His name to give it to the sons of Jacob. You see? And some of us, you know, are not paying attention to what we are reading and checking our attitudes with it, you know. Got to look in the mirror now and then and see ourselves for what we are as God sees us and do something about it. Verse 24, you shall not bow down to their gods. And they're worshipped among, you know, all the false gods that they've invented, also angels. He says, you know, do not bow down to their gods. And the ultimate god they have is Satan, the devil himself. He's an angel. And they worship demons too. They're angels. Angel, by the way, doesn't mean righteous. Angel just means a messenger. It could be a good messenger and an evil messenger. Some people think, you know, well, you know, this guy is so nice. Well, this, you know, woman or girl, whatever it may be, they're like an angel. Well, how about demons? They are angels too. So he says, don't serve them, nor do after their doings, but you shall utterly, utterly overthrow them and break in pieces their pillars. And this is what they have not done as they should have done when they came into the land in the days of Joshua. And for that reason, God told them, because if that's the way you behave, I'm going to preserve some of those to give you a hard time. And see, teach you a lesson. And when they were given that opportunity again, the 48, you know, war, to do just the same, just totally, you know, liquidate them or remove them or chase them out of the country, you see, as God said, He's going to send bees and all kind of little creatures to drive them out of the country, out of the land, you know, kill them and others, and just drive them out. And the Jews were not willing to do it. Of course, the world would not allow them to do it, but they could have done much more and, you know, solved the problem once and for all. 67 came, you know, another opportunity God gave them, they wouldn't do it either. Too humane, you see. They're more righteous than God. They've got all the human reasons, and the world has all the human reasons not to do it. Well, the reality is that God is going to do just that. And the time will come where God is going to make Israel, and you can read it through the prophets, when He brings them back, He's going to make Israel go to war and totally purge, cleanse, and purify the land from all the inhabitants of the land that do not belong there. He's going to allow some strangers to remain behind who are going to fear Him and obey His voice and commandments, but He's not going to allow other religions there, idol worshippers. That's where they are on the side of God. Well, you know, some people can argue all they want about it. This is God speaking, not man. And this is what He's doing, this is what He's going to do in the future, and He made it very plain. And so He says, you shall utterly overthrow them. You see, I'm going the one who's going to cut them off, but you're going to have your part in it. And you shall overthrow them and break in pieces their pillars. And you shall serve the Lord your God, and He will bless your bread and your water, and I will take sickness away from the midst of you. And what are the causes of sicknesses? You know, just transgression of the law of God, the laws of health. And an awful lot of us are doing just that. We have no clue, you know, a lot of us, of the laws of health, of what is good to eat, what is not, what does it do to our body. We don't search, we don't study, we don't research. You know, we don't pay attention to that. We just eat whatever comes to, you know, before our eyes. We eat junk food, and we're sick all the time, and we have evil diseases, and we cry to God for healing, and never dawns on us that we are the ones who are bringing it upon ourselves. And so they were the children of Israel in Egypt, you know. They lost knowledge and understanding, and so they were not hygienic, you know, as they should have been. And many things came upon them. They were eating fat, and they were drinking blood, and they were doing all these kind of things that God forbid them to do. And they were eating foods they have no business eating, and they were sick. You see, it doesn't come from the air. And God told them He's going to take away the sickness from them. Well, how did He do it? You know, just a miracle? Hey, there it is, poof, everybody's healthy. He hasn't done that. He gave them later on instructions that we shall go through in the book of Leviticus. He told them what to do, how to keep themselves clean, what laws to obey, what to eat, what not to eat. You see, that's how He's going to take the diseases from them. And if you know, they still had some kind of ailments, He said, you come before the priest. You know, be it leprosy or whatever other sickness, you come before the priest. You know, he's going to check it, because God gave knowledge to the priesthood to deal with these matters. And the priest would cleanse them and purge them, and, you know, and then offer them advice, guidance, and direction. He'll do it for them, for their homes, for whatever it may be. So let's understand what he meant by that. I'll take away sicknesses from you. You see, by teaching them the right way of life. That's how. Not by just miracles, you know, and everything is gone. And, you know, we have to realize that too. You know, when we are sick and afflicted and we ask God for healing, let's understand we have our part to play. He's not going to heal us, and then we'll go back, eat the same junk food, and get sick again, come back to Him again and again and again and again. That's making a mockery out of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. A lot of us are doing it. We're not even thinking about it. See, we're not studying the law of God. The fear of God is not in us as it should be. See, that's what God says. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. A lot of us are being destroyed in our bodies and minds needlessly because of lack of knowledge. And he says the reason why you have lack of knowledge is because you have rejected it. A lot of people don't want to hear that. They just want to do whatever they want to do, and when they are sick, they want God to heal them. It doesn't work like that. So verse 26, it says, none shall be scary, nor be barren in your land. Because if you are going to obey the laws of health, those things would not afflict you. You see? It's not everything, you know, is going to be taken care of by a miracle. You will live a right way of life, eat the right things, exercise, do what you're supposed to do, glorify God in the body that He gave you, which is the temple of the Holy Spirit. And as Paul made it very clearly, that those people who destroy their bodies, God will destroy. You see? God doesn't take it lightly when we are sick and afflicted because of our own foolishness. And we do not pay attention to that. That's the temple of the Holy Spirit. You know, we shouldn't bring swine, you know, and blood and, you know, all kind of evil things into the temple of God. You know, the physical one where the sacrifices were being offered, and we do not do it into our body, which is the temple of the Holy Spirit of God. God dwells in us. Some of us don't think about it, and so we eat all kind of junk and we are sick and afflicted. So through education and knowledge, by eating His flesh, drinking His blood, that is the teachings that He gives us, that we're going to be well. That's what God constantly said. When you do all those things, then it shall be well with you. Not when we don't and we're just asking for help when we are in trouble because of our own foolishness or ignorance or willful ignorance. So it says, none shall be scary, nor be barren in your land. The number of your days I will fulfill. In other words, if you eat well, exercise, breathe air, you know, have the right attitude, obey the laws of God, obviously you're going to live a long life. That's what he's talking about. And a lot of people don't understand that when they read it. And then, in contrast, you know, as for the enemies, he said, I will send my terror before you and will discomfit all the people to whom you shall come, and I will make all your enemies turn their backs unto you, and I will send the hornet before you. You see, and the bees and all that. That's beside the fact that you go to war against them and you destroy all those who resist you. But as for the rest, I'm going to send, you know, all these creatures against them. You know, they'll just flee and go somewhere else. So it would not be necessary to kill just everybody there. But everybody who stays behind, you know, they're going to dig their heels in. They're going to resist and fight you. Well, you're going to crush them. But the ones who would flee, that's in essence what many have done in the Palestinians in 48. They just fled, and so they were not killed. And many others, you know, the Israelis were not interested in killing everybody, so they just remained behind. But they lived in peace with Israel, basically all this time, so the Israelis left them alone. But whenever, they begin to act like hornets, you know, begin to sting, you know, Israel, well, obviously Israel has to do something about it and for self-defense and retaliate, and sometimes they may overdo it, whatever it may be. But the cause is the fact that the people who are there should not be there from God's point of view. Not from man's, but from God's point of view. They should go somewhere else. But obviously, they do not know the law of God, so they couldn't care less. And so God says, I'm going to take care of them. You know, the Canaanites, you know, were the same kind. And these are what you find today in that land are the remnants of the Canaanites, and remnant of the Philistines, and remnant of Edom, and of the Amalekites. And so their fate is going to be the same like their forefathers. It's just not their land. Verse 29, he said, I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year. So even though they went to war with Joshua and all over the place, and still God said, it's not going to happen just overnight. So he said, I will not do it in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field multiply against you. So you see, God is considering all those facts, and he's telling them how it's going to happen. And if they're going to be obedient to him, he's going to take care of the problem all the way to the end. And they are not, obviously, he's going to allow them to stay there and become like the hornets who will sting Israel. And so it says, verse 30, by little and little, I will drive them out from before you until you be increased and inherit the land. Because the children of Israel, as many as they were, they were not as many as the Canaanites and all the nations that were there. You see, and therefore they could not just overnight fill the whole land. But gradually, as they were going to spread from the Euphrates to the Nile and fill this whole territory, which God is going to abundantly bless, you see, and then, based on that, God is going to remove the others of the land and kick them out, you know, bring diseases on them, whatever it may be, until he cuts them off. And verse 31, and I will set my border from the Red Sea. You see, that's their border. The Red Sea. Where is the Red Sea? You see, the Sea of Reeds. The Red Sea is the one that goes all the way down to Saudi Arabia and on the, up there to Eilat. And from the Red Sea, that means their border is not just from the Negev, but the border is all the way down there, you see, which is right on the border of, between Saudi Arabia and Africa and Egypt. That's how large is the land that God promised them. From the Red Sea, and by the way, it was called the Red Sea, you see, which is the Nile at this point. And as it goes down, it becomes, you know, the wider and wider, and there are lakes there. And then later on, when the children of Edom migrated downward toward that area, Saudi Arabia, and way down, you know, toward Yemen, and then up the coast, you know, into the Shikdoms and then Iraq, well, the territory became known, the land of Edom, you see, and the sea was called the Red Sea, the land of Edom. You know, red means Edom, and Edom means red. That's the reason why here they put Red Edom, Red Sea. They should not have put Red Sea, because God says here the Reed Sea, R-E-E-D, the Sea of Reed, because a lot of reeds were growing there. And this is the sea basically that the children of Israel had to cross when they came out of Egypt. And that's the border from the Reed Sea, or the Red Sea later on as it became known, even unto the Sea of the Philistines, that's the Mediterranean, and from the wilderness. You see, the wilderness of the Sinai and that whole territory which stretches all the way down to Egypt, unto the river, that is the Euphrates, for I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hands. So that's a huge, vast, large territory. And all that belongs to them. You see, all of Lebanon belongs to Israel. Those people have no business being there. It's because of the, you know, the wickedness of the children of Israel that they were not able to totally control all this time the entirety of the land that he gave them. But regardless, whether the Arabs like it or not, or the world likes it or not, or all those people who live there like it or not, God is going to throw them out. Either kill them, you know, destroy them, make them sick, eliminate them, one way or the other. That land he gave, and he's the possessor of heaven and earth, and he can do with what he wants, what he has, whatever he wants. Nobody can gainsay him, and those who do are going to basically, you know, give him peace, you know, 6 feet underground. And this is going to be the reality of the future, as it was in the days of Solomon, so it shall be, only it's going to be even much more so. Israel will control all this land and live in it. You see, not just control it like in the days of David and Solomon, but literally inhabit that whole territory, and others would not be allowed in with the exception of a few strangers. And so from the Red Sea to the river to the Euphrates, and I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand. And so much of Syria is going to be taken away from them. You know, they're bickering about the Golan Heights, and they don't realize that a vast territory of Syria will be taken away from them. An area of Iraq will be taken away from them. You see, in Saudi Arabia, you know, and the east bank of the Jordan, you know, the Hashemite kingdom is going to be taken away from them, and all that given back to the rightful inheritors. And man has nothing to do with it. We're not reading the words of men. These are the words of God. You know, as the Arabs call him, Allah. That's the one. They don't realize it. They are blind and ignorant, and God's going to give them a rude awakening one of these days. And so God is saying, I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand. And as he has done in the past, he gives us many prophecies through Isaiah and Obadiah and Ezekiel and many others that he's going to do exactly just the same in the future. You see, I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and you shall drive them out before you. Verse 32, you shall make no covenant with them. And that's what the peace agreements are all about today. Making covenants with the enemies who still remains in your own bedroom. And that's why it's not working. You don't make a covenant, you know, with a cobra. You know, the viper. And that's what they are, unfortunately. He says, don't make any covenant with them. Nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land. They are not allowed to dwell in that land. It's a holy land. It's the land of the Lord. You see? It doesn't belong to them. It belongs to all the children of Israel. Well, in the meantime, the people that are there are mainly of the house of Judah, which includes basically the tribe of Judah. That's only a part of them. And part of Benjamin, and part of Levi, and part of the sprinklings of the children of Israel that remained, you know, with the house of Judah. when they were taken into captivity by the king of Assyria. So he said, you shall make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. No Oslo Accords, no peace agreement, and all these things. It's all contrary to God, and you can see that God is not allowing any of those peace agreements to stand. You know, it's contrary to His will. As in defiance of His command, and the Jews are not paying attention to these words. Of course, the ones that do, you know, nobody pays attention to them. Verse 33, they shall not dwell in your land. That's your land. You know, the song, this land is my land, God gave this land to me. Lest they make you sin against me. For you will serve their gods, for there will be a snare unto you. And I know the old days, that was idol worship, that was the problem. But even then, that land does not belong to them, they have no business being there. And it's interesting, you know, the word snare here, in English, the word in Hebrew is mokesh, and it's the same word that is used today for mine, you know, like minefields. He said, they're going to be like minefields for you. You know, you're going to step over it, think everything is okay, and you're going to blow to pieces. And let's continue now with chapter 24. And unto Moses he said, come up. Now this is the end of the session there that God had with Moses. You know, he wanted to have it with Israel, speak directly to them, but they would not allow him. So basically from chapter 20 to chapter 23, those three chapters, that should have been, you know, the direct encounter between God and his bride. But she was not willing to listen, just like they're not willing to listen to this very day. And just like there are many in our midst who call themselves the people of God, you know, who serve God, there are many parts of the law of God they're not willing to listen to. And they are rebellious against it, and they are resentful of it, and they don't like to hear it. You know, and they think, well, you know, I'm going to serve God my way, you serve God your way, and let's all live in peace. Well, God says, one law shall be to all of you. You're not interested in confusion in Babylon, and we are all in Babylon, and we don't realize it, and God says, come out of Babylon. We all read the same book, just like, you know, the orchestra, they all read the same notes of the same piece, and they all play the same thing. You know, you don't find them, you know, each one of them playing something else and still have harmony. You know, that's an illusion. You know, that's a make-believe, you know, the reality that we have. We think we can live in peace. It doesn't work like that. You know, that's not the peace of God. The peace of God is when we all basically study the same law, believe the same thing, practice the same thing, and obviously we've been so fragmented and fractured and confused, and most people don't even know the law of God. They don't study it. You see, they don't study it together to all realize, hey, these are the words of Jesus Christ. He's going to hold us accountable to it. And if we do not obey all these things that God holds us accountable to, even in this day, that is the laws that we can still obey. You know, there are certain laws you can because of no tempo and other circumstances. But at least the things that God commanded us to do that we can do, if we don't do it, we're going to appear before Him full of spots and blemishes, and we're not going to be accepted. And God will look at us and say, you know, you think that you are my people, forget it. I don't even know you, you know. You're workers of iniquity. You're lawless. Look at all these laws that you don't even, you know, give a dime for, so to speak. You don't care about. You have resentful attitudes toward, you know, my law, my teachings. And you call it, you know, Old Testament stuff. And I'm the one speaking. And I'm the one that gave it to you, and I'm the one that told you. Don't think that I came to destroy the law of the prophets, you know, the Torah which I myself gave. It says I came down from heaven in Mount Sinai, came from the Father. Don't think that I came, you know, do away with that now that I came here. I didn't come to destroy it, I came to fulfill it. And heaven and earth shall pass away, but not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law. So don't, you know, don't play this kind of games. Think, well, you know, we just do this, obey only this command, or this doctrine, or that doctrine, and then we're okay. And then let's all live in peace together. It just does not work like that. We can kid ourselves all we want. It doesn't work like that. That's not the peace of God, that's human peace. That's the kind of peace that seek to have in the Middle East. And doesn't work. You know, we're just kidding ourselves. And so here God stops, you know, this conversation with Moses, you know, giving him a piece of his mind, so to speak, to give to us, so that mind will be in us. And then we read in, at the end, and he said unto Moses, come up unto the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu in English, and the 70 elders of Israel, and worship you afar off. So now God spoke to Moses. Now he's bringing the witnesses, because now they're going to continue with the covenant itself and the ratification of it. And so there is a need there for all these witnesses. And God was going to hold all these leaders of Israel responsible for this witness, and they were going to be, so to speak, the bridegroom, you know, the bridesmaids, whatever you want to call them at this point. That's basically the ceremony that is going to take place here, the ratification of the ceremony of the wedding between God and between men, between God and his wife, Israel. And this is what you read here. But as for Moses, he said, you come to me, but as for them, you stand afar off. You know, you don't come close to me, only you, Moses. And Moses alone shall come near unto the Lord, but they shall not come near, neither shall the people go up with him. Nobody else is allowed in, only those people. And God makes a separation there. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point and continue next time. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.